Welcome to the Alia Graphic Podcast. This is episode 88. And since 80 is my favorite number, 88, that must be a good sign. Now, I'm Giorgio Rutia, and I'm the Alia Graphic Novels and Comics convener. But before we get started, as a national group based across the land we call Australia, we would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of this land and acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. I personally would specifically like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the custodians of the land from where I'm speaking and where I work and where I live and play and do lots of other things. I pay respect to the elders past and present of all First Nations people across the land and thank them for their rich storytelling traditions and art. We need truth-telling and treaty. And today is my absolute pleasure to introduce you to Mia, who is a new voice in the podcast and in our team. So welcome to the podcast, Mia.
Thanks, Yogi. Hi, everyone. I'm Mia. Favorite animal is a meerkat.
Excellent.
Yeah, love it. I'm a collections library tech and love all things graphic novels, especially some of the ones that I might mention today.
Excellent. Can you tell us like a couple of your all-time favorites?
Oh, look, anything by Nate Stevenson is a big thing for me. Like, I love his work. I think he writes under N.D. Stevenson. Obviously, you gotta love, oh my gosh, what are they called? The Heartstopper. How did I forget Heartstopper?
Yep.
Heartstopper is a big one for me. I don't know. There's just so many different ones, and I love everything.
That's fair. That's cool. Yeah.
That's so broad of me. Sorry.
We'll get to know what you like more as we go as well. So that's good. Yeah. And in fact, we usually start the podcast with our recent reads. So what have you read recently that you want to talk about? What you want to mention?
So I've actually been reading Mouse by Art Spiegelman. So that was, I haven't read it before. So it was very full on. I have had to take breaks in between reading it just because of the content of it is very heavy, and I don't want to overwhelm myself, I guess.
Yep.
For those that don't know, it's about a gentleman talking with his father who was in the concentration camps during World War II, and he's like learning about like what's going on, learning about his story and what was going on during World War II, in particular in his life. And then it's also juxtaposed with his current relationship with his father. Yeah. It's quite an interesting read. I'm not going to lie. I love it. But it is also quite heavy. So I have been breaking it up with stuff that that is a bit more lighthearted for me. So yeah. Like The Lumberjanes by Nate Stevenson with Shannon Waters, Brooklyn Allen and Grace Ellis. That I've been going back and rereading that as well, just because that's been a bit of a throwback for me recently.
That's fair. Mouse is, it's an extraordinary graphic novel. I've got it right here on my shelf as well. But it's true. It is quite heavy as well. So yeah, I understand taking breaks. Well, me personally, I read volume 6 of Fence, which is titled Redemption by C.S. Packard and Joanna the Mad. And the slow burning development of all the characters and their relationships is starting to pay off. Things are starting to happen, and we're finally ready to hit the state championships, which will, I think they'll start publishing that this July. I think it's June or July they start the next few issues with the state championship story arc, so I'm really looking forward to that. So yeah, if you like sports manga or anime, this is a great title, really easy to read and lots of fun. And the other one that I read is was published a couple of years ago, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin. by Kevin Eastman, Peter Laird, and Tom Waltz, published by IDW. Now, I have a confession to make. I am a little bit strange in that I have never, ever consumed any Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles content before. No comics, no movies, nothing. I think I played a video game, but apart from that, nothing. So this was my first experience reading them, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was really great. So I have no idea about what happened before or their relationships or anything, but coming in cold, I actually really enjoyed the story. It's a really good action comic. And I, of course, I love samurais, I love action and things like that. So, yeah, really, really enjoyed it. And I'm really looking forward to reading the next part of the story. And in fact, they're also apparently working on a feature film of The Last Ronin, which apparently there are rumors that it could be the first R-rated Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film. So we'll see what happens. And from your reaction, I gather that you've read Teenage Mutant before.
I'm just quite shocked that you haven't actually interacted with the media at all.
I know.
I'm
I know.
Sorry.
I'm weird.
I would be
I don't
amiss
know.
If I didn't ask, who's your favorite turtle so far?
So far.
That's all good, but who's your favorite turtle? Come on, there are four to choose from. Or are you also?
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I can't decide. Sorry.
You love them all equally.
Yes. Yes. I am a good dad like that. I love all of them. But yeah,
I respect.
I don't know
I respect
why.
That.
I don't know why I've never watched the movies or anything. Like, I don't know. I just it's just something that I've always been aware of them. And I was very aware of the cartoon as well, the animated series, like, you know. And a lot of my friends watched it, but I didn't. I was just, at the time, I was interested in other things. I don't know. Somehow I just missed the boat totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm glad that
happen.
I read this. I'm glad that I read this, and I may go and explore some of the back catalog as well. Now, from what I hear as well, there's kind of a, it started as a more kind of mature series, but then it went into more kind of kid-friendly territory. And obviously this is more mature. I think I'm interested in the more kind of mature comics. So I have some investigating to do, some learning to do.
Just watch, we're going to get, you're going to have all of the figures on, like all of the action figures. You're going to be so deep into it. It's going to be great. And I can't wait to see.
Maybe. Maybe. Who knows? Who knows? All right. So let's move on. Just briefly, Australian Comics News. Sarah Firth's Eventually Everything Connects, which was, of course, in our Notables shortlist. Excellent graphic novel published last year that I absolutely loved. It will be published in June in the US, UK, and Europe. And so that's great. And I think it's been published by Graphic Mundi, at least in the US, where in the cover, she had to change drawing a little bit, because in the cover in Australia she appears naked, but apparently that's not okay in the US, so she needs to be clothed. But apart from that, it's the same graphic novel. Nicola Scott seems to be working on the next volume of Black Magic, which is excellent. I'm really looking forward to that. Because that's a graphic novel series that, or comic series that's been developing very, very, very slowly. But it's a really interesting series. So I'm really looking forward to the next volume. And Jessica Walton and Ashka's Stars in Their Eyes has been really well received in the US, receiving a Stonewall honor, being included in the 2023 Rainbow Book List for YA and the YALSA Great Graphic Novels for Teens list, among others. So it's great that it's receiving that recognition internationally as well, which of course was shortlisted it by us as well in our notables, I think the previous year, yeah, 2022. Yeah, so yeah, good news. Now, we don't have any Australian graphic novels released this month, but there's plenty to talk about. So Mia, do you want to talk about some of the news?
Yeah, sure. So there's a whole thing going on. Well, there was a article listed in the Anime Herald by Priya Sridhar. I am sure I have botched that name. I am so sorry, Priya, if you're listening. Where she's going through talking about the challenges in stocking larger manga series. And it goes into detail. It's quite a great read, honestly. And then she's talking about how we can't stock everything and we can't necessarily appease to everybody, but it's more that we've got to just make sure that we put in, we have as much as we can. They talk about the shelving issues and the issues of long-running series, in particular, such as One Piece or My Hero Academia, and just how it can cause a bit of a budgetary issue, and then also going into
some potential solutions.
Yes, that's it. Sorry, you beat me to the punch there, Yogi. Thank you. Keeping me on track, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's going into solutions. So it's just that, so she goes that her advice to librarians is to see what the demand is and then make decisions about what they want to expand. So just going with what the flow is with the local community and such.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it's a good read, honestly.
Yeah, because she consulted also kind of with like a few things. She consulted with a few other librarians as well, so it's interesting
to
see what they say as well, and it's one of our ongoing battles all the time, you know, because some mangas do have very long series, and so what do you do? I remember recently my collections coordinator from my library asking me, you know, they suggested this title, but it's got this many volumes. What do you think? What should we do? And I said, look, it's not the most popular series, but, you know, it's not an obscure one either. Maybe we could buy the first 4 or 5 volumes and see how they go, whether they move, you know, whether there's a request for more. And he liked that idea, which is something that I pinched from someone else in a webinar somewhere, you know. And in fact, this month in our roundup as well, which of course, like always, you can find on our website, there is an article as well that's from No Flying No Tides that's looking at mangas that have one volume. One and you're done. So not all manga is long series. Now, here you had another news item as well.
Yeah, so Dogman is now the best-selling, is one of the best-selling books around the world, and they're all going up, actually, especially with the new publication of The Scarlet Shredder in the number 12 in the Dogman series. That man's just pumping them out. Good on him.
Yeah, the extraordinary thing as well is that it's been actually the best-selling book in the US in the last 4 weeks. So since it was published, it's been the best-selling book in the US. And that's of any category, not just graphic novels, the best-selling book. But not only that, it's interesting that some early data shows as well that it's actually sales are up 9% in Australia and New Zealand.
Mm.
They're also 10% higher in Canada. And crazy, insane 48% higher in the UK, which is just astonishing. But not only that, sales of the backlist of Dogman have also increased 25%. So the law of diminishing returns doesn't seem to apply to this series, because as the series progressing, it seems like it's getting more and more popular.
Yeah.
We just can't keep them on the shelves, can we?
We really can't. I swear, I'm repairing those books at least once a week. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, or buy new ones.
Well, yeah, we got to keep up demand. I love it.
Yeah.
So interesting.
That's really interesting. And we'll see whether Dogman makes it to the list of the best-selling book in the U.S. This year. I think it was in 2021. It was the best-selling book. And this could be the year when it does it again. Now, talking about sales and things like that, Brian Hibbs publishes a yearly report of graphic novel sales in the U.S. book market every year on the Comics Beat. It's a really, really interesting report. I always like to look at it. His reports are really, really, really long. And it's up to you whether you just read the first part, which is usually like the key points, or whether you go deep into it. But it's a really interesting report. And this is really important as well. This is the U.S. book market. So there is a difference, and there is a very important distinction in the U.S. that they make between the book market, which are bookshops, and the direct market, which is the comic stores. So these are sales in the book market. And this, by the way, don't include Scholastic book fairs, for example. So this is just the book market. It's always a very thorough and fascinating read. And the report for last year is out now. Now, some of the key points are that 49% of sales were to manga, which is an incredible number. So in bookstores in the US, 49% of comic book sales went to manga. That is astonishing. Manga is huge. It's massive. 38% went to kids' comics, where Scholastic and Dave Pilkey reign absolutely supreme. And I'd like to read a few more things. Marvel and DC combined are less than 10% of the book market. Obviously, their share in the store, in the comic stores, I'm sure it will be bigger. And yes, there has been a little decline in sales. So they've sold less than last year. But you know, 2022 was a massive, massive, extraordinary year. And they broke all records. And even though they've sold less than 2022, sales are still higher than in 2019. So, you know, the last year pre-pandemic, essentially. So sales are still really, really high. DC and Marvel had a pretty bad year, both of them. They're really struggling in the book market. So it will be interesting to see what happens, because, for example, DC this year are actually launching a new line where they are publishing a lot of their classics in a smaller format, which is, you know, more for the book market. So we'll see what happens with that. And another interesting thing that I saw in the report as well, there are a lot of things, but another one that I wanted to mention as well is that Brian says, in case you're looking at the above, like the sales are lower and you're concerned, don't forget the flip side. As I was looking over this list, I was truly astounded by some of the sales totals, especially given where we started out with these reports 21 years ago. So even books that came out years ago are still selling and selling good numbers. For instance, Johnny Christmas's NBA shortlisted swim team sold 46,000 copies. Jerry Craft's New Kid, despite constant bannings and controversy, sold more than 75,000 copies, and that was published quite a few years ago. The most banned book in America for 2 years running, Genderqueer, still sold 31,000 copies. And it wasn't just controversy that sold. El Defo sold 25,000 copies. T-Bui's memoir, The Best We Could Do, which came out in 2017, sold 10,000 copies. So it's interesting to see that a lot of books that were published years ago are still selling healthy numbers and are in the top 750 best-selling graphic novels. So backlists still sell.
It's always so great to see that type of thing, honestly. Because, I mean, you do have some really great books within that list, like Genderqueer. It's very good, very good. Cannot recommend it enough. But you get, but yeah, it's always great to just see that things do live past their year of, like, shining. They keep going on. They have a life further than that.
Yeah. Another one and another article that we've shared as well is about comic shops in the US. I know that we're not comic shops, we're libraries, you know, but I think it's
we're better than that.
But it's interesting to see some of the trends of what's happening there. And so it's an interesting report to read. And again, you know, it shows that comic sales in the comic stores are, again, lower in 2023 than 2022. But it shows that a lot of comic stores are diversifying also what they're doing. And there are some interesting things and data there as well. So, you know, it's worth looking into it. And in fact, we're hoping to have a podcast episode with an Australian comic store soon. I can't say much more than that because we're in early talks, but I think it would be a really interesting conversation to talk to them about the trends that they're seeing in their shop, what's selling, what's not, trends that have changed, things that have changed in the store across the years in Australia. How does it compare to the things that we see from the US? And also how they work with libraries, because the comic store that I'm talking to, I know that they work with some libraries as well. So that should be a really interesting conversation. So looking
Can't
forward.
Can't
wait. Yeah, yeah. Anything else that you wanted to share in terms of news like that, or anything you want to comment about all those things that we've mentioned already?
I've been a bit silent, haven't I? Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's always, I do love me a report, so I have just been scrolling through the comics, the book Scan 23 that we were just talking about.
Mm.
And what was quite surprising to me was that Scholastic sold 8.5 million copies of only 116 titles.
Yep.
Last year. And that just blows my mind that is just that's a small amount and that's made such a large impact.
Yeah.
And just in general, that's just so crazy. You don't see those numbers outside of like bigger titles.
Mm. So I think Scholastic is like the blockbuster.
Yeah, true.
You know, so it's got a few titles that just sell so much that are so popular. So, you know, you've got the Wings of Fire, the Dogman, obviously,
yeah.
The Babysitter's Club and Reina Telgemeier's Amulet. Those are the titles that just, you know, sell like hotcakes. And we can see it in the library. You know, the ones that that are always out. The ones that a kid tells me, where can I find this? Sorry, you're not going to find it here on the shelf. You're going to have to reserve it because it's never here. And when it's returned, if by some miracle it doesn't have a hold, and we shelve it, it disappears on the day, pretty much. Yeah. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, to have that conversation with the Australian comic store, because I think that a lot of what we see, the trends that we see and the sales that are reported in the US, they correlate to what I'm seeing at the library, but that's my perception. Yeah. And sometimes I look at some of the data in terms of loans and things like that, and there is a correlation there. But getting data on Australian sales of comics is really hard to find. I wish it was easier, but it's not. So it would be interesting to hear their insights as well. Yeah.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
Yeah. Now we should move on to the always exciting, our favorite picks from the new titles this month. So there are always new titles coming out, and there are so many of them and lots of interesting stuff. But these are, and I remind everyone always, we haven't, most of the time, we haven't read these titles because they're new, or they've just been published, or they're just about to be published. So we just look at the list and we just go by, yeah, that looks like a really interesting one kind of thing. So, yeah, you want to share your first one?
Sure. So this is Together Forever by Kristen Gudsnick. So this is the fourth and final installment of the Imaginative Making Friends series, another one that I can't actually keep on the shelves, funnily enough. So this is just them going through, and I'm going to read a little excerpt of it.
Yep.
So Danny's magical sketchbook has steered most of her middle school life so far. It even helped create her best friend, Madison. But now the sketchbook is gone and Madison with it. Danny's back to being a loner. Then one day, Danny tunes into the new TV hit TV show, My Magical Best Friend, and it's starring her magical best friend, Madison. The show is clearly based on Danny's life, and she watches it regularly with a mix of horror and fascination. But lately, there's something else about the show that's captured her attention. Madison seems to be dropping hints for Danny to come rescue her. With no magical sketchbook at her fingertips, can Danny find a way to save her best friend? Ooh.
Yes, this has been a very popular series, yes. And I didn't know that the fourth was the final installment.
I didn't either. I was quite shocked. I thought she was going to keep going because it was popping off.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there may be a few people were a little bit sad about that.
What's the saying? Enjoy it while it lasts.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then you can always read it again.
Oh, true. Yeah. You can relive the love, relive the friendship.
I know some people who just always keep going, keep going, keep going. But I do like to go back and read books again. Yeah. With books, I don't do it as often, although I do it, but not as often. But with comics, I definitely go back and read it again. And maybe, the next time I focus more on the art or really pay a lot more attention to how scenes are developed and things like that. So, yeah. Anyway, so my first pick is actually a junior. So it's Winnie the Pooh. And you may wonder, what? Winnie the Pooh? Yeah, what? Yes. So there is a graphic novel adaptation done by Travis Dandro and published by Drawn and Quarterly, which I would never have expected to. But there you go, surprises. So Linworth Graphic Novel Prize winner Travis Dandro returns with the charming tales of Winnie the Pooh. In 2015, the children's classic, long since viewed as the benchmark for intelligent and whimsical storytelling, slipped into the public domain. So,
woo!
The beloved series now gets the comics treatment. So Dandro expands the world of 100 Acre Wood in all directions, creating stunning full-page tableaus where who and everybody's favorite characters romp, argue, fail, and laugh. So indebted to the unforgettable pen and ink drawings of E.H. Shepherd, this addition to the canon of timeless literature for all ages encompasses all of Winnie the Pooh's original adventures. I think this is an absolute must for libraries, and I'm delighted that we finally get a comic book version of it.
We get to see the Hundred Acre Woods on page.
Yeah.
Like, we actually get to see images of it. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I think this is, this is an absolute winner, you know. And I can see how these will be very, very popular in libraries. So, yeah, absolute must buy. What's your next one?
My next one is A Fox in My Brain by Lou Luby, published by Fair Square Comics. So it's a graphic memoir about a young woman's emotional journey, struggling to understand and figure out her recent diagnosis of bipolar that makes her feel like so what it says here is, and after many troubled years, she finally discovers what's causing chaos in her brain, her cleidomania, a bipolar disorder that appears in the form of a fox.
Yeah.
So this one, it looks like it'll be a really good one just for like mental health understanding as well, and just how it affects an individual that suffers from this disease in particular. But also she brings in apparently a lot of humor, which that's the only way to get through a lot of chronic illnesses, unfortunately. But yeah, it looks like a good one, and it looks like it will be a fabulous read.
Yeah. Graphic medicine is, is keeps growing and growing, and this looks like a really interesting title as well. So definitely good one.
So what about you, Yogi?
Well, now we're taking a dark turn. Dwellings by Jay Stevens.
Ooh.
Yeah, Dwellings by Jay Stevens, published by Oni Press. So when you look at the drawings, they look really cartoonish, but don't be deceived. Welcome to Elwich, an oasis of small-town perfection, where the schools overflow with cheery-eyed children. Lovingly adorned homes line the historic boulevards, and only the crows can see the deep festering rot that lurks beneath the pristine surface. Murder, demonology, possession, obsession. Elwich has them all on offer, and behind every dwelling awaits a horrifying new story to be told. Shock, terror, and wry humor pepper every page of this Emmy Award-winning, Eisner Award-nominated cartoonist and animator. I think it's got everything that I like. Humor, dark humor, horror, gore, and yeah. I think I'm going to have so much fun reading this.
It hits all the buttons.
As I was reading the blurb, I was like, yep, tick, 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 tick. Yep, absolutely must read this. Do you like horror?
I'm not the biggest horror person. However, I'm not going to lie, this does give off a bit of a supernatural vibe for me. Like the TV show Supernatural, that I'm like, oh, I might need to dip my toes into this one. This looks
good.
And I
like that really, that mix of really cartoonish kind of drawings with horror, but with humor. And
I might need to get some recommendations from you a bit
absolutely.
Later.
So those are our picks. Obviously, I remind everyone, on our website, you'll have the full roundup with lots of other titles as well. There are lots of other interesting titles. And just kind of finishing, we have also published a creator chat this month with Paul McLaughlin, who published Little Viking Space Ranges. This was a graphic novel that we weren't aware of, they've already published two books, and the third one's coming out, I think it's in June, but that's from memory. Don't quote me on that one. So the discussion covers this delightful and really humorous comic for kids, and the process of making comics, and Paul's experiences with libraries and doing workshops at libraries, and more. So you can watch that creator chat on our YouTube page, or if you just want to listen to it while driving, obviously don't watch it, on YouTube while driving, so listen to our podcast feed. And there's also a webinar that was published just recently by Library Pass, which was Comics and Manga 101. And it covered a lot of great ground. So we really recommend that webinar as well. And all that is in our roundup. We do have other creator chats coming up. So we will be talking to Josh Santos Spirito, who's publishing a new graphic novel in June. And we do have others that I'm working on. So just watch this space. Finally, all the best to everyone heading to beautiful Adelaide for the ALIA National Conference. James Baker will be there representing our group, ALIA Graphic. So make sure you check out his presentation on the book club, the ALIA Graphic book club that we have. And he will also be speaking at the ALIA group's panel talk. So make sure you check those out. Make sure you have fun in Adelaide.
So everybody going to ALIA, ALIA National, feel free to have a rad time. You're in the city for it.
It's a beautiful city. I've been there twice and really enjoyed it. I think it will be a great national conference. So all the best to everyone there. And thank you for joining me today, Mia.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it wasn't too terrifying, was it?
No, however, I do know that I could have said more. However, I'm just sitting back and watching it go.
Well, it was your first time. You're warming up. All good.
Thank you for this. I appreciate the assistance and the support.
And everyone, remember to light up your whole brain and read comics.